Our next group of speakers will focus on health, enriching human life and society. Human health is impacted by our environment, the bacteria that co-inhabit our bodies, the proteins that our cells produce, our metabolism, and our genomes. Here at UC San Diego, advances in discipline-specific knowledge and novel technological capabilities provide new opportunities for multidisciplinary and translational work with the potential to keep people healthy and transform the delivery of healthcare. Making good on that potential will require the processing of huge amounts of data, for which the campus is well positioned. Key organizing frameworks that support our work in this area include the Institute for Engineering and Medicine, for example, promotes collaborations between faculty in the health sciences and engineering to develop creative new technologies to improve health and clinical care. The Qualcomm Institute provides a meeting ground for engineering, information, and communication technologies, the digital arts, and applications to societal problem solving, and for mapping human and microbial genomics, and for defining the human health and basic biology in terms of integrated omics, genomics, metabolomics, proteomics, etc. The San Diego Supercomputer Center exemplifies the tradition of developing the technological infrastructure and data analytics software to enable massive data sets to be applied to complex phenomena. UC San Diego is also a leader in the understanding, prevention, and treatment of many diseases, including cardiovascular, neurological diseases, and cancer. Our next group of speakers will describe some of the ways in which UC San Diego is leading the path to better health through utilization of big data across disciplines. Dr. Rizal Kurzak from the Moores Cancer Center will demonstrate the potential promises and challenges of personalized cancer medicine. Rizal Kurzak received her medical degree from the University of Toronto. She is best known for successfully creating and chairing the largest Phase 1 clinical trials department in the world while at the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center. Her unique approach emphasized a personalized strategy to optimize cancer treatment by using cutting-edge molecular profiling technologies to match patients with novel targeted therapies. Dr. Kurzak has served as a principal investigator on more than 90 clinical trials and has overseen more than 300 trials, mainly using novel targeted molecules, several of which have gone on to Food and Drug Administration approval. Tonight, she'll share how genomics and immunotherapy are increasing survival in a remarkable way and seeing responses in patients who were previously considered untreatable. Please welcome Dr. Rizal Kurzak.
Well, thank you very much for having me speak here, and really an incredible group of speakers. I guess I'll walk around like other people did before me, and so it's a hard act to follow. But I'd like to talk to you a little bit about what's happening in the cancer field. And I think just about everybody gets touched by cancer sooner or later. One in every three people develop are diagnosed with cancer, and there's really hardly anybody that hasn't had somebody in their family diagnosed, or they themselves have been diagnosed with cancer. And unfortunately, especially when cancer becomes metastatic, it really becomes difficult to treat, and most patients do die of it. But I think we're really beginning to understand cancer much better, and hopefully we'll be able to change that in the near future. What I'm going to talk to you about is this idea of personalizing therapy and actually matching patients with target-based agents. So what are target-based agents? These are drugs that have been developed to target specific abnormalities that drive cancer cells, but are not found in normal cells or expressed at a much lower level in normal cells. And that means that while these agents can kill the cancer cells, they don't do a lot of damage to the normal cells. So there's a much bigger differential than with classic chemotherapy. Now, one thing I hear very frequently is that we need new drugs to treat cancer. And of course, that's a really great idea. We always need new drugs to treat cancer. But there's actually a very fundamental problem in the way we classify cancer. And unless we overcome that problem, it really doesn't matter how many new drugs we develop. So I'm going to give you a really simple example. But I hope it'll illustrate the thinking. So I think everybody here would understand that insulin is a really great drug, a revolutionary drug, but it wouldn't be a revolutionary drug if we used it to treat pneumonia. Actually, it would be a pretty lousy drug. And we would conclude, if we used insulin to treat pneumonia, not only that insulin is not a very good drug, but that pneumonia is a really difficult disease to treat. And I know that sounds simplistic, but essentially that's probably what we've done in cancer for most of my career. We may have really good drugs, but we have no idea to which patients to give them. And so we sort of give them randomly to patients, and a few respond here and there, but that doesn't work out very well. But I think we have a lot more knowledge now, and we have the tools to really change that. And that's really what I want to talk about. Just a little bit of background about myself and how I came to think about this. I worked at MD Anderson for a long period of time, and I was charged with building a new department, which was a department of phase one clinical trials, which are those drugs that have moved for the first time from animals to humans. And there's been now a wealth of drugs that are targeted against specific signals known to be abnormal in cancer that have now moved into the clinic, into patients. And what we started doing around the end of 2007 is applying some of the new genomic molecular profiling techniques to understand the genomic abnormalities in patients and to match them with drugs. Now, as you might imagine, technology available, the tools available in the end of 2007 when we started doing this was pretty primitive compared to what we have available today. But nevertheless, by doing a few thousand patients, we learned a lot. And I'll tell you a little bit about what we learned. And I think one of the main take-home messages that I would like to impart is that the future is here. A lot of what I want to talk about transforming cancer treatment is not something that will happen in 5 or 10 years from now, but it's actually something that we're doing right now. And that doesn't mean that we still don't have more to learn. Of course we do. But it's not all about the future anymore. It's about the now. So why are cancers so difficult to treat? Why has it been really so tough? This is a pie chart about lung cancer. We used to think lung cancer was one disease. But what we now know is that actually lung cancer is made up of multiple different diseases, and each subset is defined by a different genomic abnormality. And therefore, what we used to think is, why do we keep on finding drugs that work in 5% of lung cancer? You know, we really need a better drug that's going to work in 90%. But now we understand that that may be biologically impossible, because in fact, the reason a drug works in 5% is because that 5% defines a subgroup of patients that are that in which the lung cancer is caused by a specific abnormality. So the idea more and more is now to divide and conquer. We have to divide the diseases up based on their molecular abnormalities in order to contact them. And we have to understand that each patient is different and that specific targeted agents will work only when given to the right patient who has the sensitizing abnormality. So we had created a protocol that I want to talk to you about, and I think it'll illustrate a little bit about where this is going. It was called PREDICT, or Profile-Related Evidence Determining Individualized Cancer Therapy. And we began to look at cancer in what we called histology-independent approach. So histology-independent means we weren't looking at it in the classic way. Usually you diagnose cancer as if it comes from the breast, it's a breast cancer. If it comes from the colon, it's a colon cancer. We didn't really worry about where it came from. We wanted to know the underlying molecular abnormality that was driving the cancer, regardless of where it came from, and then to match patients with the appropriate drugs. The patients that came to us in this setting, I want to mention, they were end-stage cancer patients. By definition, because they were going on early experimental therapy, each patient had already been told that there was nothing more that could be done for them. And they had failed to respond to usually about four or five different therapies in the metastatic setting. So these are really pretty tough patients. And we began to look at the mutations, and I use PIK3CA as an example. It's a common mutation, and it drives cancers. But there's a few points I want to make from this slide. First of all, it was found in about 10% of 1,000 patients with advanced cancer. But I think what you can see is it was found in a subset of multiple different cancers. And this, endometrial cancer, 29%, breast cancer is 24%. And really, if you look at almost any cancer, you can find this abnormality. And more importantly, the aberration didn't segregate by organ of origin. So this means that our classic way of classifying cancers wasn't really working out, because if we're going to give a drug that suppresses the PIK3CA, we can't choose patients by whether they have breast or colon cancer. We have to choose them by whether or not they have the abnormality. And so this is what happened when we started treating patients in this way. Remember, these are end-stage patients. This is a waterfall plot and shows if the patient is progressing or not. Anything below the horizontal line is a response. Anything above is progression. And this is what happens when you do this the normal way, where you diagnose cancer, whether they're breast or colon, but without molecular matching. You get about 5% of patients responding. So it's not very high. But when we started treating patients by matching them at a molecular level, the response rates went up to 27%. Certainly not what we'd like it to be, but about five times higher than the baseline response rates. And more importantly, we really began to see some very interesting things, which suggested that genomics was a disruptive technology and that we really have to begin to think differently about the way we do clinical trials and the way we do practice. So this is a series of patients on which we do genomic testing, and we actually did 75. These are breast cancer patients. And these are the genomic abnormalities that you see in these patients. But the main thing that I want to point out is that there's no two that are the same. Some patients have things in common, but even when they have something in common, the rest of their genomic portfolio is different. And yet, the way we treat patients and the way we do clinical research is to try and find things in common between patients and treat them in the same way. But this tells us that that's not going to work, because each patient is different. And actually, we expect it's going to get even more complicated, because we've only been doing genomics, and yet there's so much more to do. There's the RNA, there's protein, there's so much more. We're just touching the tip of the iceberg. So this individuality is going to become even more pronounced. So a little bit what we're doing at Moores Cancer Center to make this real for patients. We've developed a center for personalized cancer therapy. It has multiple different components, and it tries to take advantage of some of the real strengths in the area, the 600 biotech startups, the supercomputer center, the collaborations with all the great science, Salk, Sanford Burnham, Scripps, UCSD, and developing new clinical trials. And then I want to talk to you a little bit about, we've developed a molecular tumor board. So this really makes it real for patients. So we have now sequenced about 1,000 patients with clinical grade sequencing. This is sequencing that can actually be used to make decisions on patients. And we bring together our physicians, our radiologists, our surgeons, but also our bioinformatics specialists, people from the supercomputer center, our scientists. And we try to make decisions on these patients, usually they're end-stage patients, where we use the molecular profiling to specifically make a decision of targeted and tailored treatment recommendations for these patients. I've talked about the tumor But we're really discovering that hereditary predispositions are also going to be very important. And again, I think we've just begun to touch the tip of the iceberg here. So what the patient's genomics, not just the tumor genomics, may tell us their immunity, their immune response. Will they have side effects from the drug and so forth? And, you know, so the question is, does this robust, this is real actually, 100-year-old woman, was this really good luck? That she smokes like a chimney and is in really good health? Or was this genomically predetermined? And I really believe it's genomically predetermined. And in the same way, we may be able to determine if people will have side effects from a drug or if they'll have an immune response as well. And then, you know, I'd like to finish off by saying that this is really not just about cancer. I believe that cancer is the forefront because it's been such a horrible disease and such an urgent problem. But I want to give you this example. This is really going to touch all of medicine. So you see this woman, and she has bladder cancer, and her bladder cancer is due to a mutation in a gene called FGFR3 that developed in her bladder. And we have drugs now that can specifically impact and inhibit that gene function. But what is really fascinating to me is what you see on the other side is people with achondroplastic dwarfism. And they have the exact same mutation, but they were born with it. And so is it possible that the drugs that we're now using in cancer could affect some of these children? This is not an isolated incident. This is really, we are finding out in cancer all sorts of things that are meaningful outside the cancer field. Thank you very much for listening. San Diego's incredibly beautiful.